Hi, folks. I'm here on my own today because I have the sad duty to report that my brother Tom passed away this week at the age of 77 due to complications of Alzheimer's disease. Turns out he wasn't kidding about not being able to remember last week's puzzler all those years. Now, if you want to share your thoughts, we're hosting a conversation on our website, cartalk.com. But I have absolutely no doubt that what Tom would really want under these circumstances is for each and every one of us to have a really good laugh and remember him. So that's what we're going to do today. We've put together some of our favorite moments of Tom doing his thing here on Car Talk, stuff that always makes me laugh. And to start off, we want to remember Tom as the consummate radio professional that he was, always handling his role on this show with the great dignity and gravitas which NPR is known for, or used to be known for before Tom.
And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and of all things, foreign aid.
Yes, and this comes to us by way of the news desk. Here's the news. Clinton deploys vowels to Bosnia. Cities of Zbrzvetsk and Grozny to be the first recipients. Before an emergency joint session of Congress yesterday, President Clinton announced U.S. plans to deploy over 75,000 vowels to the war-torn region of Bosnia.
Really?
The deployment, the largest of its kind in American history, will provide the region with the critically needed letters A, E, I, O, and U, and is hoped to render countless Bosnian names more pronounceable. The deployment, named Operation Vowel Storm by the State Department. Who writes this stuff? I mean, it's
well, it is.
It's so
much needed.
It's set for early next week with the Adriatic port cities of Zbrzeszyn and Grozny. The two C-130 transport planes, each carrying 524 count boxes of E's. We'll fly from Andrews Air Force Base across the Atlantic and airdrop the letters over the cities. The citizens of Grozny and Zbrzeszyn eagerly await the arrival of the vowels. My God, I don't think we can last another day, said Zdrzejczyk. Said Trushki Grozny. I have six children, and none of them has a name.
They don't have a vowel among them.
Said Zimbabwe resident Grugs. With just a few key letters, I could be George Humphrey. This is my dream.
1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Steve in Chicago, formerly of East Arlington, Massachusetts.
We can tell by your accent, Steve.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So what's up, Steve, and how did you get to Chicago? And do you like it there? And why did you leave Arlington?
Oh, man.
All those questions. Come on.
I got to Chicago for a career and a girl. I lost the girl, and I've given up on the career. So I'll come home now.
You made me spit my coffee all over the table.
Hi, this is Rebecca in New Haven, Connecticut.
Hey, Rebecca.
I have a question about my 1988 Chevy Sprint, the most poorly named car of all time.
What is a Sprint?
What is a Sprint?
I don't even remember the car.
It's a Geo Sprint. It was a...
Yeah, when you lift up the hood, it doesn't say Chevy. It says, like... Something foreign.
Isuzu.
Yeah, okay. Well, you can see that we're going to be a big help to you. I didn't even know what the car was.
No, but we do know it's Japanese, and we speak Japanese.
Okay, yeah. Great. Well, I'm a graduate student, and I'd really love to drive home to see my family in Indiana.
What are you studying there at Yale?
I am in the School of Management.
Oh,
so I'm studying for an MBA.
An MBA.
Yeah.
The best degree you could ever get. Completely worthless.
Completely worthless.
Yeah.
No. I have a worthless degree in philosophy. From my undergraduate.
The philosophy degree will stand you in much better stead than the MBA,
and
which will only turn you into a yuppie, suspender-wearing, BMW-driving moron.
Right. Driving too fast.
Great.
Trust me. Notice how we cleverly
brought her away from that sprint question. Whatever it was going
to be. In another minute, she won't even remember why she called or to whom she's talking.
So which courses are you having the most fun with in this MBA program? Have you taken decision theory yet?
Yeah, we took game theory. Game theory.
Did you cover Monopoly and all those?
Well, we did Monopolies in Monopoly game? The game of Monopoly?
Well, yeah. No, not Monopolies.
Yeah, the first week was on Monopoly. We moved on to Parcheesi.
Parcheesi's good. Uh-huh. Yep. Checkers is good.
Checkers. Well, yeah. We had to move up, and the last, of course, was chess.
Oh.
But actually, chess is, you know, game theory.
Yeah, yes, it is. Sure.
Okay, well, we've stonewalled you enough.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for calling, Rebecca.
Oh, you know, your 5 minutes is just about up. You're at 4 minutes, 56 seconds.
Wait.
Well, if you didn't squander your time, you would have gotten your question answered.
Yeah, what'd you have to talk about your silly MBA program for?
You think we care? Game theory. Parcheesi. Talking about the relentless pursuit of perfection, it's obviously time for what? The puzzle.
You said it was a rollicking new puzzle. I believe you first discovered this word rollicking just a few weeks ago when you attended a meeting of the International Motor Press Association. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
And you said to me the next day, because I had to miss it, I was busy. You said we had a rollicking good time.
We did, and you missed it.
I did, yeah. It's a good word. I like it.
All right, here it is, and I'll make it as brief as possible.
Impossible, yeah.
This is a non-automotive. Would you like it to be automotive?
I'd like automotive, yeah.
A night watchman worked for a large automotive company for several years.
No, this is the only theory of which I am sure in the entire world. You know, I don't know whether the Earth goes around the sun or vice versa. I don't know about electromagnetism, but I do know that it never pays to buy a new car.
Don't know much about biology.
Oh, God.
Hey, aren't you glad you called?
Yeah, I sure am.
I'm glad you called.
The exact opposite of what I thought.
Yeah, well, all the other people, including all those guys at UCLA, they're wrong.
But look at Roger. You'll do a lot better with the girls if you're driving the Mercedes.
Yeah, who's going to go out with a guy driving a 79 Cutlass? Dump that old pig. Come on, buy a real car.
Are you married, Roger?
No, I'm single.
Buy the Mercedes.
You never will be.
We have time for a few more calls.
Wait a minute. I want to talk about this little note that John gave me here.
Oh, okay.
Which has to do with Dr. This is from Massachusetts, actually. Dr. Joseph DeFranza, who's from the University of Massachusetts Medical Center in Worcester, did a study showing that smokers have 50% more automobile accidents and receive 46% more traffic tickets than non-smokers.
Oh, I know the answer. It's obvious. This guy had to be a PhD to figure that out?
This guy, he's either a PhD or an MD.
Well, it's even worse.
Doctor. Well, he speculates on what the answer.
I know exactly the answer.
Go ahead. What do you think?
Well, if you were a smoker, you'd know. Because
I'm not. I mean, I'm pure. I can breathe better. I can smell flowers.
I know. When I
eat more.
When I
I'm fatter.
When I used to smoke.
And I'm dying for a cigarette.
When I used to smoke, a cause of great concern
last week
was dropping a cigarette down between your legs while you were driving.
Especially when you park next to a bus. No, everyone's looking out the window wondering what the hell you're doing.
No, worse than that is driving along at 60 miles an hour. And no, it's all right if you drop the whole cigarette. You got a shot at finding that. But when the end of the cigarette
right
fall off
your legs.
And fall down between your legs at 60, you're done for. And you don't think that would cause you to speed. Anyway, that's the end of the show for tonight. I can't go on. So Dr. DeFranza had to figure that out. What's his reason?
Dr. DeFranza says, he says that smokers. I'm sure that we can help you with this if you answer just one small question
for
me.
Okay, great.
how do electric brakes work?
My impression is that our garage doesn't know either.
Well, I can honestly say, and you know me, I'm an honest guy, I have never seen electric brakes in my life.
It's irrelevant how they work.
It doesn't matter. Ah, excellent. We're going to give them an answer without knowing how they work.
Right.
Okay, Paul, this is going to be good. Get a pencil.
Yeah, I got it.
You know, Tommy never really wanted a job, but he said if he had to pick one, he'd like to be America's philosopher king. Now, we immediately rejected that idea out of an abundance of common sense and for national security reasons. But that didn't stop Tommy from giving advice on topics far afield from car repair. And one of his favorite topics to meddle in, of course, was marriage.
Well, I'm 36 and she's 27, so we have all these problems in the car, like what radio station and whether we're going to stop for coffee. And it goes on all day long.
Well, I mean, the first rule, have you read Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, or whatever wherever they're from?
Oh, yeah, she read that.
Okay, she read it, see, but you didn't. But I have my own law of marriage, and it is more important to be happy than to be right. Now, you may know that you're right. I mean, I'm always right. Whenever my wife and I have an argument, I'm always right. But being the clever fellow that I am, I never try to prove to her that I'm right. And she thinks that I'm a dummy because I'm always wrong, but she loves me.
Well, I'll tell you, everyone else thinks you're a dummy, too. You know, a little secret.
And he finally got around to starting doing it, and he's having problems. And I'm very worried about what this is going to do to my parents' marriage.
I think you're all wrong here, Julia.
Okay, why?
Because there is nothing that your mother would like more than to get your father out of the house. I mean, you ask any 50s-type age woman, what would you like most in the world, a fur coat, a Lincoln Continental, a Mercedes, or get your husband out of the house? And
there's not a day that goes by that my mother doesn't call me and ask me to take my father away for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Don't you want your father to stay with you for a couple of days?
Can you do something with him for a couple of weeks?
So you've got on the other side of the equation, you're going to be now saddled with not only a wife, but a child, and not only a wife and child, but a minivan. So talk about emasculation. I mean, when you now have to drive around in the minivan, life will essentially be over as you know it today. And so we've got your mental and emotional health on the one hand versus economics on the other. You might as well just start pulling those pants up around your chest right now and start practicing, yes, dear, because, I mean, what will be left? I mean, there's no more fun.
Well, my life won't totally be over. I mean, I actually...
Trust me, it will. They ask kids various questions having to do with marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And they got answers from little kids. I mean, these are kids like 5 to 10 years old. And I'll read you just a few of them. Here's the question they asked. How do you decide who to marry? Alan, age 10, says, you've got to find somebody who likes the same stuff. Like if you like sports, she should like it that you like sports. And she should keep the chips and dip coming. How can a stranger tell if two people are married? This is good. Derek, age 8, says, you might have to guess based on whether they seem to be yelling at the same kids. What do most people do on a date? Lynette, age 8, says, dates are for having fun. Even boys have something to say if you listen long enough. And my favorite, how would you make a marriage work? Ricky, age 10. You should tell your wife that she looks pretty, even if she looks like a truck.
Okay.
I do that. Now, did I have to throw
that
in?
No, that was entirely
unnecessary.
It's a classic example of pushing something to the limit, right?
I don't know what
you just couldn't keep your mouth shut. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
A truck?
Oh, no! My worst fears!
A truck?
My worst fears!
See? You never know.
That wasn't me.
Uh-huh.
That was Berman who sneaked into the studio and leaned over my shoulder.
And faked Tommy's voice.
And faked my voice. Hi, hon. Hi, hon. What's for dinner tonight? I guess not much.
You'll be lucky if you get a dog food the way you're going.
Will it be the wet or the dry stuff?
He likes the dry, Jane.
I'm really sick of the wet stuff.
Well, we'll see what we can scrape together. But don't expect too much.
Bye, hon.
Bye.
I guess I'll be seeing you from the garage.
Oh, yeah. You'll be waving to them from the garage. They'll be having a wonderful time without you. See, I keep
Dougie,
telling you.
I hate you.
I keep telling you. You know, Tom's wife wasn't the only family member to call our show and complain. Our mother used to do it from time to time, too, mostly to tell Tom to wear his undershirt in the winter and stop smoking his damn cigars. She also joined us for Mother's Day one year. And back then, we used to end our segments by telling listeners not to touch their dial or the end of their dipstick would fall off. And our mother really surprised Tommy by trying to deliver that line.
Well, although you should be showering your mother with affection, you are instead listening to NPR's Car Talk with Click and Clack, the Tappet brothers. Known to their mother, that's me, as Tom and Ray Magliazzi. We have more of your calls coming right up, so don't touch that dial, because if you do, the end of your lipstick will fall off.
Not lipstick. Dipstick.
Dipstick. That was a misprint.
Now when you bring your car to our place, we just know you'll be impressed as we tackle all those problems that have baffled all the rest. So we've had your car a week now, and we haven't got a clue.
We don't worry. We are confident. We know just what to do.
We do the shrug. We do the mechanic shrug.
Those exhaust fumes and these strange smells have cost us lots of brain cells, so we're doing that mechanic shrug. Alternators, carburetors, we got leaky radiators. Chrysler 40, Zusu, Nissan, fancy seats we can't get grease on.
Fuel injection, leak detection, bad connection, failed inspection.
Lexus, Subarus, and Hondas make us sing the blues and wanna do the shrug. We're doing that mechanic shrug.
Roll out the grease, roll up the rug,
and do that mechanic shrug.
Don't drive like my brother.
And even though public radio listeners reassure one another, it's only an hour a week. Whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Car Talk. And if you're just joining us today, we're remembering my brother Tom, who very sadly passed away this week. We've heard from a lot of people, and if you'd like to share your thoughts about Tom, many of our stations are hosting conversations on their websites this weekend, and we've got one going at cartalk.com as well. And today we're doing what I'm absolutely convinced Tommy would have wanted us to do, and that is laugh. So we're listening to some of my favorite moments of Tommy just being Tommy, and these next few moments are examples of when Tom instinctively grasped that a caller needed a little more than car advice, that some greater intervention was called for. And he was just the guy to do it.
Well, how do you feel now? I mean, now that we've told you that absolutely,
well, almost
without a doubt, you were responsible for the demise, the very early demise of this wonderful car that Dad had.
I feel bad because he really never knew what happened, and he just thought it was just another bad car.
What if we told him? Would that be bad? Would it be cathartic for you?
Now, Christy, I think you need to resolve this. I mean, just knowing, your knowing is not enough.
You don't think so?
We need Dad's number.
But you know.
We need his number.
Is he home?
Okay.
Go ahead.
He's at work.
We'll take the number off the air, but we're calling Dad at work.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And what's his name?
It's Richard.
Richard. Okay, we're dialing him now.
Okay.
Christy, do you know if Daddy-O knows us?
Yeah, he does. Mm-hmm.
He does?
Yeah, our whole family likes the show.
Cool.
In that case, he's likely to hang up on us or not.
Dick Conklin.
Hey, Richard.
Yes.
This is Tom and Ray Magliozzi from Car Talk.
Oh, I'm blessed.
Well, not necessarily.
Not necessarily?
No.
We were just talking to your daughter, Christy.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, you know, she called to cleanse her soul.
Okay.
She called to describe to us a little incident that occurred in 1982 with your Chevy Citation.
You may not remember this. You may have tried to block this out.
Yeah, seared, I think, is a proper verb.
Yeah, she said it like through a rod.
You threw a rod.
Threw a rod.
And you have no idea why this happened.
No.
You don't know all the dirty details.
There are some things that pater familias doesn't want to know.
Yeah,
okay, we're going to tell you all the details. She was driving the thing to Bloomington. You knew that.
Yes, I knew that.
And the temperature light began flashing. You didn't know that.
No,
you didn't
She's
know
She's never
that.
Told you this.
And she, it was annoying.
She kept driving without any water in the radiator?
Well, worse than that. She put black tape over the light because the light was gone.
At least you can laugh about it, Richard.
And she finally coasted into a gas station with the engine glowing. And the two guys that were there told her that she'd probably had fried it, but they would put a new thermostat in and send her back home.
Oh, wonderful.
She didn't go home.
She didn't go home.
She didn't take their advice because the light went out. She went to the party down in Bloomington, then drove all the way back to South Bend the next day.
Ooh.
And gave you the car, making you think that everything was just hunky-dory. And she's been living a life of sin,
deception.
Crime, and deception.
Well,
now, I think you would ask, if she recounted the story to us correctly, you would ask her if anything unusual had happened on her trip, and she denied it.
Yeah.
She said, no, fine, no problems.
Well, she can't live with this lie
she's
anymore.
She's with us right now, Dick.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Christy?
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Dad.
Sure.
Hi, Chrissy. Chrissy, you didn't tell him about the broken axle on the 1966 Buick.
I didn't break that axle. Why?
Come on, Christy, come clean.
About
the new radiator on the 1984 Nova.
No, Dad, you bought me that broken axle car for $500 and sent me, like, on my merry way. That's why the axle broke. That thing was a lemon.
Sure.
Tom and Ray, you've got to realize that my daughter is the car is what Alban Berg is to Melody, you know, the expressionist conductor.
Yes.
Well, whatever.
Oh,
look
boy.
At the country ought to be thankful that she's now in a city with decent public transportation and doesn't need to own a car.
So you don't hold it against her that she withheld this crucial information all these years.
Well, not in this public forum, you want to know.
I love my daughter. That's
you love your daughter.
Comment.
Isn't it something?
Thanks, Dad.
Is Christy your only child?
She's my only daughter.
She's my only
limits tester.
Well, Christy, I mean, do you want to make like a formal public apology to Daddy-O, both for wrecking his car and for living this life of deception for 15 years?
For this.
Well, Dad.
You have suffered.
You didn't suffer any more than my pocketbook at the time.
Did it cost a lot? I can't remember.
Fred and Jim's garage bought a boat.
For each of them.
Right.
It was terminal. It had to be reconstructed from scratch.
Oh, yeah, no, it's terminal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think this warrants a full-scale apology.
Oh, come on, you guys.
Come on, Christy. And some groveling and maybe a few tears, like, Dad, I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry, Dad.
Boy, that sounded real heartfelt. Sorry, Dad.
Sorry.
Hey, that's as much as you're going to get out of it.
It sounds that way. Obviously, by using the brakes as much as you did, the brakes got very, very hot.
Right.
And they got hotter than they were designed to get.
Right.
And that's why you should have downshifted, and that's why it's recommended. On
all right, he knows that. You don't have to berate the guy. He even told you I didn't downshift.
I'm telling
you. He knows he should have downshifted.
Geez.
Cut the guy some slack. His car is on fire here. I'm with you, Jerry.
Hi.
Hi, this is Gail from South Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Gail from where?
South Philadelphia.
South of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I feel like I'm sort of a fugitive of sorts here. I take a bridge to work every day, and they charge $2 to get across this bridge. And at the last minute, I realize that I'm in a coins-only lane, and there's no way to get across the traffic.
And you start shredding the dollars, right?
Exactly. I had no choice of what to do. With this short notice, I had no way of pulling this kind of cash together. So I realized that it was also a toll lane where one of those arm things comes down, so it's not like I can just go through it.
Ah, so you're going to have to run the rapids, as they say.
Exactly.
Shoot the rapids.
Exactly.
When the guy in front of you, the other guy's green light.
Yeah.
So I waited until the guy in front of me threw in his, whatever, 300 quarters or whatever, and when that arm thing went up,
I floored it.
I went through it. Buzzers went off. There was mayhem everywhere.
Did you make it?
No one followed me, though.
You made it under, though.
I was very lucky. I don't know how I did it, but I made it under.
Well, you've obviously discovered one of the best kept secrets in the world. Who was there to chase you?
Nobody.
Nobody.
No,
of course not.
My question is, do they take a picture of my license plate? Is there some way that I could, like, send the $2 in? Because I don't want them to send something to my house because my husband's going to be so mad.
So you have a guilty conscience about this.
I really do, but I don't want to get caught in the I'm honest, and then they're going to charge me $40 for doing this.
What bridge is it? We can find out.
It's called the Betsy Ross Bridge.
It's 95. Well, we are trying to reach the Pennsylvania Transportation Authority.
Okay.
Huh? We have him on the phone? You've got to be kidding me.
Oh, my God.
You're not
going to
believe
this.
Hold on a minute. We're not giving him your name.
Okay.
But evidently, Doug and Ken have just somehow gotten a hold of who? Dawn, somebody who's the bridge manager.
Hello, Dawn.
Hello, Gail.
Oh, this is cruel.
Oh, my goodness. I really was ready to pay the $2, and I didn't.
Yeah, sure.
Gail, we chased you for 4 miles. Stop.
No, wait a minute. Dawn, who are you really, Dawn?
I'm the bridge manager at the Betsy Ross Bridge.
You really are?
I really am. And if we don't get this $2 fast, we might have to close this bridge up.
Oh, my God.
No, but I don't think Gail wants to get herself in trouble.
No.
How about this, Dawn? If Gail sends the money to us and we send it to you anonymously in the name of Gail, Gail Anonymous, then she'll be off the hook, right? And you won't know who she is, and she will not incriminate herself. Is that okay with you?
That sounds good to me, but Gail is not on my good side to begin with for calling my bridge toll a little pricey.
No! I mean, that's a lot.
How long a bridge is it, Dawn? How long is this bridge?
Try New York bridges. $7 a shot.
Oh.
Yeah, that's true.
This bridge is, how long is it, Dawn? I mean, it's, you know,
are there any trolls underneath the bridge?
It's a mile and three quarters over the river. But if you don't use it, Gail, how are you going to get back into Pennsylvania?
I don't know.
Maybe she doesn't want it.
Why do you have to have a coins-only lane?
Well, we do have some to service patrons who have a commutation sticker on their window.
I don't think they're marked very well, Dawn, because I didn't see it until the last minute.
Kind of feisty for a lawbreaker, isn't she?
Yeah. I mean, hey, Gail.
Yes.
Cool it up. I got to give me a name.
Right. I put a lot of pressure on myself to always be achieving and always to get the A's, and so it's a lot more of that.
A's are very overrated.
What?
Yeah. A's are overrated. B's are good enough.
Oh, absolutely.
Fact, sometimes a C is pretty good. I bet a few C's look pretty good.
C's? Sometimes you'd pay $100 for a D, man.
I tried that. They wanted 500.
Woo! No, I mean, if that's what's troubling you, I mean, you shouldn't do that to yourself. Mm-hmm. A's are vastly overrated. My brother is absolutely right. I mean, I think. I never had any. I've heard that they're vastly overrated. And the people who have the A's, they're not any better than you. I mean, what if you told yourself that you don't want any A's?
God, that'd be so tough.
Sheesh.
You are a very self-motivated individual.
I mean, I don't know if I should divulge this on public radio here.
Divulge it.
To the public. But I have a son who's in high school.
Uh-huh.
And when he first started high school, he, too, thought that he had to get A's.
Uh-huh.
And he was miserable. Mm-hmm. And I told him one day, A's are not important. B's are great. He looked at me like the whole world had opened up to him, and he said,
You gotta be kidding. I said, are you kidding? A bee is absolutely wonderful. Ever since he realized that, he never does any homework anymore. But I told him that because he was getting too tense. Mm-hmm. He was losing perspective on what life is all about.
Oh, I remember him. He kept saying, I'm a wigwam. I'm a teepee. Too tense.
Too tense. Wigwam. That was bad.
Hey, on the spot, what do you want on the spot? You know, one of Tommy's favorite things to do was to interact with you guys, whether you were on the phone with us or in person or by mail. In fact, he carved out a section of almost every show to read some mail from you guys. And personally, I love that segment. Because I could usually catch a quick nap. He'd go on and on and on. Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about what? Cars, car repair, and the answer to an important philosophical question.
You're going to love this.
I'm sure I will.
This is from Andy Reichman from Marlboro, Vermont, 05344. Dear Click and Clack, I'm writing to offer profound thanks to you for resolving an important philosophical question that has been heatedly debated for the last 20 years.
Really?
Get this now. Do two people who don't know what they're talking about know more or less than one person who doesn't know what he's talking about?
Is wow. Let me think about this for a minute. What's your opinion?
Oh, get this. I believe that you have definitively answered this query and have put the debate to rest in your recent conversation regarding electric brakes on a cattle carrier. Remember that call?
Oh, I do.
Amazingly enough, you prove that even in a case where one person might know nothing about a subject, it is possible for two people
to know less
to
than
know
nothing.
Less.
Well, I think we prefaced our answer with the fact that we know nothing.
He says that. He says one person will only go out so far on a limb.
Unless he has someone to egg him on.
His construction of deeply hypothetical structures and will often end with a shrug or raising of hands to indicate the dismissibility of his particular take on the subject. With two people, the intricacies, the gives and takes, the wherefores and why nots can become a veritable pas de deux of breathtaking speculation. This is a great letter. Interwoven in such a way that apologies or gestures of doubt are rendered unnecessary. I had always suspected this was the case, but no argument I could have built from my years of observation would have so satisfyingly closed the door on the subject as your performance on the cattle carrier call. To begin your comments by saying, we'll answer your question if you tell us how electric brakes work, and we've never heard...
That was a tip-off.
We've never heard of electric brakes. I remember saying that. And then indulge in lengthy theoretical postulations on the whys and wherefores of the caller's problem allowed me to observe that you were finally putting this gnarly question to rest. I am Jim Cronin. I don't know where you're from, Jim, because you didn't tell us. But you did write to us on the 14th of August, if that triggers your memory, whoever
what
you
year?
Are. It doesn't say. 14 August. Dear guys, as you know, Dante claimed that the following phrase was inscribed above the gates of hell. Lasciate ogni speranza, voi che entrate. Right? Mm. Abandon all hope, ye who enter here. We know that. No doubt, some of your customers feel that these words should be prominently displayed on your brother's garage. That may well be, but I would like to suggest an even more appropriate phrase. It sprang from the lips of Tommy in response to the query of some poor unsuspecting woman with a muffler problem. Here's the quote. No matter what it is, it's going to cost you $200 if that's what it is.
Yogi and he had help on this.
Says, Yogi Berra couldn't have said it better, and he probably did. What was that? No matter what it is, it's going to cost you $200 if that's what it is. I like it. You want? I can get that done in like Old English, and we can hang it up over the garage.
Yeah, Old English, all right.
Before we go on, we got a note here from a guy named Dave Flood. And Dave is going to his 50th reunion at UMass, University of Massachusetts.
And he and some of his classmates, one of his classmates in particular, had a dream. A dream! You ready? And in that dream, this classmate and a couple of other classmates were singing Coney Island Babe.
Oh, my God. This is pretty sick.
Dave knows that we know the song. I don't know why. We must have mentioned it one day. And he doesn't know the words. But in the dream...
Well, the guy, we said goodbye.
In the dream, he says, they knew the words. So he wants to know, A, could we tell him the words? And I, in fact, have already answered him by with the words.
Do you know all the words?
Certainly, and so do you.
There are more than we sing.
Well, we know enough to make it look like we know the words. I thought we should...
Oh, yeah, because usually the tomatoes start flying after we sing that first verse.
Well, I thought we ought to sing just a few words that we know, so he'll know what the email means, because, you know, my honey and all that stuff. You don't know where that fits in the thing. You all ready? Right. So give me the note, and we'll do it.
Goodbye, my Coney Island baby. Farewell, my old true love.
True love, my honey.
I'm gonna go away and leave you. Never to see you anymore.
Never gonna see you anymore.
I'm gonna sail upon that ferry boat. Never to return again.
So goodbye.
Farewell.
So long forever.
Boom, boom, goodbye, my Coney Island.
Boom, boom, goodbye, my Coney Island.
Goodbye, boom, boom, goodbye, my Coney Island.
Goodbye, my Coney Island, babe.
The FCC is on line one.
All right, Dave, have a great reunion.
Yeah. God, how did I get talked into that?
Because you can't resist. If I start singing Coney Island, babe, there is no way that you can say I'm not going to do my part.
Drive
the same. And even though the editors at Roger's Thesaurus hit upon two new synonyms for bozo when they hear us, this is NPR.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Car Talk, and today we're remembering my brother Tom, who passed away earlier this week from complications of Alzheimer's disease. And we have more info on our website, but as you can imagine, this is a really difficult loss for me, and I know for many of you, too. But I know for a fact that the best tribute I can give my brother is this show, where he made so many people laugh and so many people feel better about everything. So this week, the staff and I put together some of the moments where Tom was the most Tom-like, wacky, mischievous, brilliant, hilarious, and you certainly know that he and I teased each other a lot, played a lot of jokes on each other, and a lot of those made their way to the show, like this one. And we're broadcasting this week from the Brotherly Love Department here at Car Talk Plaza. What's this about? I don't trust you.
And you shouldn't.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to tell a little story.
Okay.
As most people know, we've had an absolutely terrible winter here in our fair city. So we get really sick of it. And the entire staff of Car Talk planned a trip to South Beach for a few days.
Yes.
Remember?
Yeah.
So the day before we're due to leave, my poor brother Raymond takes ill.
I was at death's door.
At death's door. He's confined to his bed, and his doctor says he can't go to South Beach. Dougie says to me, well, I guess the trip is off, huh? Your brother, poor guy, I mean, he's deathly ill. And I answer in the immortal words of Don Ameche, if you saw the movie Trading Places, screw him.
Those weren't exactly the words, but close enough.
Close enough. So my brother says, I understand you guys have to go, but I have one request.
Well, I said... I was choking back the tears at the time.
No, I could see that.
Yeah.
But you were choking back the tears.
I mean, leave me here alone.
Leave me here alone. But I guess he was trying to be brave. And he says, just do me one favor. Think of me while you're there. Think of me in my sick bed watching it snow, rain, sleet outside while I'm looking out through my convalescing window.
Yes.
So on the way to the airport, we forgot all about him. Didn't even know who he was. Your brother. Who's got a brother? Oh, my brother, yeah. Anyway, we get to South Beach, and we say, we have to do something so that my brother knows that we were thinking of him while we're here.
Yeah.
And after many hours of contemplation, it may have taken us all day. I mean, I remember sitting there with Bugsy thinking about this all day.
And you could sit all day with
one cappuccino after another.
Plotting and scheming.
The idea finally hits us. Here is a way that Raymond will know that his buddies were actually thinking of him while we're living it up in South Beach. Because, I mean, just to tell him we were thinking about him wouldn't prove that we were thinking about him. So I have here in my pocket a little something that will absolutely prove to you that we were thinking of you. I mean, we sat there for days eating, drinking, and running up this tab.
This is a credit card receipt from the News Cafe with my signature on it. I don't know how that is. It says Frank Rizzo. And it is for an you guys were very generous with the tip. I see.
Well, yeah.
When do you give a 45% tip?
Don't forget there were a lot of us. And
this doesn't make any difference.
The waiters had been
45%.
They had been very, very good to us. You know, they saved us our table.
So you got this credit card from my son. My son was in on this. All right, I've got to tell this story because this was one of the meanest things my brother has ever done to me. Aside from breaking my nose when I was a little
boy.
That
was an accident.
That's what you say. You had that fiendish look on your face.
No, it was an accident. I was trying out my curveball.
No, you're trying but you told me to put my hands behind my back. And I listened.
You did. You were a dumb little kid.
Okay, I'm going to throw you my curveball. You can't use your hands to catch it. Why not, Tommy?
Catch it in your teeth. That's how I did it when I was a kid. When Dad taught me.
Many years ago, I took my family on a trip to Montreal, Canada.
Yeah.
Back when
I remember this.
Back when they still spoke a little bit of English there, but not very much.
Yeah.
And we had spent a couple of days at this wonderful hotel whose name I don't remember. And one night I was sitting in our room watching the television, and the phone rang. And I picked it up, and the voice said, Monsieur Magliosi? I said, yes. This is Henri, the concierge. I said, yes. Did you used to own a late model Ford LTD? And I said, pardon me, used to own? Monsieur.
There has been an unfortunate accident.
There has been a terrible fire in the garage of the hotel. And your car is burnt to a crisp.
Totally demolished.
Mon Dieu. And as he was explaining this with this beautiful French-English accent, my mind was racing, trying to figure out how I was going to get the family back to Boston without a car.
And the contraband cigars.
And the 500 Cuban cigars that I had bought. Exactly. And it was only after many minutes of my agonizing and asking Henri what I could do, where I could rent a car. And, of course, every question I asked, it was, no, monsieur, that is impossible. We don't rent cars in Canada, et cetera, et cetera. And as I got more and more despondent, finally, Henri began to laugh. And I realized it was my brother. So I just want everyone to know what a mean streak he has in him.
That was, I have to say, I had a rollicking good time.
I did call Dougie once to pretend to be an Internal Revenue agent.
There, I rest my case.
Well, I had a good teacher. 1-800.
As you might imagine, the Army and I did not get along.
No.
I mean, you would think that the Army would know in a minute that I didn't belong there. Why would they try to encourage a relationship? I mean, the minute they met me, they knew I didn't belong there. Why didn't they just say,
why
don't you just go home
and save
us all a lot of trouble?
They think they can make a soldier out of anybody. And in truth, they do succeed with amazing regularity.
But
I know why you didn't like it. It's remarkably similar to work. Yeah.
No, it was my mouth that got me in trouble.
I mean, oh, really?
And they didn't like it when I laughed. Because,
no.
I mean, I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
When Sergeant McNeely used to walk into that barracks on Saturday at noontime, and he said, "Everybody will go on pass this weekend. Except Private Maggie." And I would laugh my butt off. And he was so ticked that I laughed. I was looking forward every week to him saying that. I had this huge barracks to myself for a day and a half.
Oh, boy.
Everybody will go on pass this weekend except Private Maglio. Yeah. You remind me of a very funny story. You know what I'm thinking, don't you?
I do.
This friend of ours, he had an old car. It was one of those 80s big GM cars. And he worked late at night. One night, he's driving by a construction site. And it's late. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, and he sees a bunch of 4x8 sheets of plywood. It so happens that his brother-in-law is doing a little construction job.
It needs 20 sheets.
He could use a dozen or so sheets of 4x8 plywood. So this guy...
Half-inch seat, the exterior grade. They just happen to fit the bill.
He says, who's going to miss them? So he stops his car, and under cover of darkness, he piles up half a dozen of these sheets of plywood on his roof, except he has nothing to tie them with. So he says, if I drive really slowly, where are they going to go? So he piles up, I don't know, half a dozen sheets of 4x8 plywood, quarter inch, half inch stuff. And he's not too far from his friend's house. He's going to drive to his friend's house, his brother-in-law, it turned out to be, and he's going to pile them up in the guy's yard. So he very carefully starts up and drives very, very slowly.
No, at this time he has about 18 sheets, if I remember the
story.
Did he? 18 sheets on the roof.
18 sheets is a foot and a half of plywood. He says, oh, boy, Pep is going to love me.
18 sheets is 9 inches. It was just enough that he could reach up with his hand, thinking that holding these sheets is going to prevent them from going anywhere.
Anyway, he's doing really well. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. There's no traffic except for that one car that cuts him off almost. He slams on the brake. All 18 sheets of plywood come forward and rip off the entire front of his car. The hood, the grill.
The headlights.
The whole thing. And he's sitting there at the intersection with 18 sheets of plywood on the street.
And $1,000 worth of damage.
And you know his first words were. Oh, man.
Well, just like your garage door opener won't work from 2 blocks away. Everything has a range.
Well, that's exactly my point.
Right, but I think if you're within the limits of the range and you bounce it off something like that and you disperse the signal enough, then you'll get... I don't get no respect. Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug. I may have the nomenclature a little bit.
Your chin is acting as a disperser. Did Enrico Ferri stop this way?
He did. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and don't drive or disperse like my brother.
Don't think like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You know, Tommy and I had a lot of fun with each other on the show, but he also clearly had a great time with you guys every week. His interview style wasn't exactly the one spelled out in the NPR style manual, but it was a kind of classic in its own way.
Hi, this is Kathy from Oakland, California.
Oh, Kathy with a C.
You're right. Kathy from Washington Crossing, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, so it's Kathy with a K.
No.
Oh, darn.
Hi, this is Kathy. I'm from Phoenix.
From Phoenix, and that's with a K, absolutely.
That's it.
I've never been wrong on the Kathy front here.
Hi, I'm Kathy calling from Connecticut.
Hi, Kathy.
Kathy with a K?
Kathy with a C. Hello, this is Kathy from Old Lyme, Connecticut.
Hi, Kathy from
Kathy
Old
with
Lyme.
A C.
No.
Hi, this is Kathy from Montevallo, Alabama.
Alabama?
Uh-huh.
Well, there's no question then in my mind.
What
it's,
is it?
It starts with a C.
It's a K.
Where'd you move from?
Philadelphia.
Ah, see that?
You're right.
Hi, I'm Kathy from Centerville, Virginia.
Don't tell me now.
Okay.
Because I've already made my decision. Okay. What do you think?
I already wrote it with a K.
So did I.
You're both wrong.
Oh, I knew I should have swapped.
Well, maybe we'll get the
Monty
right...
Hall would have made me swap. Have you been losing coolant?
Yes.
I've got it.
You've solved it.
I have got it.
Go ahead.
You are going to love... I could kill you! This is going to be so good. Here's what's going on.
Get it over with, because you... the longer...
No, even you are going to love... You're going to say, how the hell did you figure that out?
The longer you applaud yourself, the harder the humiliation is going to be to accept.
Get this.
I'm ready.
Okay.
You have a leak such that... It is squirting.
Oh, this is the most bogus.
That you have a hot coolant is squirting. Are you ready for this?
Onto the temperature.
On the temperature gauge.
Oh, no.
And it's underneath the dashboard. I mean, this came to me unencumbered by the thought process. I could see it in a vision, like Edgar Casey. I'm telling you, take this to your mechanic.
Okay.
Tell him to look underneath the dashboard.
Underneath the dashboard.
He will find a squirting leak.
Okay.
Wow.
Great.
Kim, if this is right.
I hope this is right.
I will never hear the end of it.
Okay. We'll see if it works.
And you are going to be so embarrassed at the things that you've been saying to me all these years.
Well, for Kim's sake, I hope so.
Oh, I love you guys.
Good luck, Kim.
Thanks a lot.
See ya.
See you later.
Bye.
Jeez.
You know how, when you know you're right, I have absolutely no fear. I know.
Can we make sure that we save this?
Hi, this is Heidi from D.C.
Hi, Heidi.
Heidi.
Hi.
Heidi, 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 ho. What's up?
Well, I have a Peugeot station wagon, 505. I know. Disaster already.
How old is it?
1987.
And
someone had to have left this to you.
That is exactly what happened.
Was there a divorce involved?
No.
And was it nasty?
No, this was...
Hi, this is Linda from Kotzebue, Alaska.
Linda.
Another wacko from Alaska. How you doing, Linda?
I'm doing good.
Where in Alaska? Way up or all way down?
Way up. Kotzebue is about 30 miles north of the Arctic Circle.
North of the Arctic.
You know, I can't even conceive of that. 30.
So what frozen fish facility are you working at?
I can't believe. I mean, and get this. She wasn't born there. She went there
of her own free will. Otters are born there.
Of my own volition.
Of your own free will, you went to Ochopachi there, Alaska.
Okefenokee, Alaska, yeah.
Well, you know, it's not as bad as people might say.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful place.
Right.
No, I'll bet it's not.
No, I mean, how
I'll
could
bet
it
it's
be?
Worse.
I can't even... Well, we're just about out of time this week, so what I'll leave you with is what my brother has left all of us with, his laugh, that crazy, infectious, joyful, completely uninhibited laugh of his, and his ability with it to make all of us around him smile. I know we could all use that right now, so we're going to let Tommy's laugh cheer us up, and we'll see you next week.
Well, you should see, you can imagine what a goat. Doris's car, which is an old Alfa Romeo with a soft top's got.
Yeah.
Goats get up there, get on the top of her car, and just put their foot right through it. So.
Sure. And Doris doesn't come back anymore, does she? And you're lonely, aren't you?
That's the real reason I want to do this.
Maybe you can meet Doris at like Motel 6.
Oh, Richard.
You want to give us Doris's number? Maybe we... Richard,
I don't know if we've helped you at all, but it's been a hell of a lot of fun talking to you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Build a pen and call Doris and apologize. See you later.
Bye-bye.
I keep thinking about the Don Rickles bit. Where he's a French general, and he's going around kissing on the two cheeks, and he turns around and he says, "I gotta get a broad." Woo-hoo! It's amazing. The less we know about something,
this is going to be right up there with the cattle trailer lights.
And even though Silvia Poggioli says, porca miseria, ma chi sono questi cafoni, when she hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.